On the phone, sir?
Copy that.
Good morning, sir.
Hello?
Yes, sir. Good morning. You're not going on record yet, but what is your name so that we know who we're talking to this morning, sir?
This is Miguel William Herrera.
Okay, if you hold on one moment, the Honorable Mr. Kiwanis will be conducting chairing your hearing, so the next voice you will hear will be that of the Honorable Mr. Kiwanis, who will conduct your hearing, sir.
Thank you, sir. Mr. Herrera?
Yes, sir.
Can you hear me clearly?
Yes.
Can you state your full name and ADC number for the record?
Miguel William Herrera, DLC number 077037.
Thank you, sir. You're appearing before the Arizona Board of Executive Clemency for a 31412B parole hearing to consider parole to your next consecutive sentence or absolute discharge. I would like to introduce you to the members of the board conducting the hearing with you today. This is a telephonic hearing and you cannot see us, but sitting on the bench is the Honorable Mr. David Deal, the Honorable Mr. Michael Johnson. At the center of the bench is our esteemed board chairman, Dr. C.T. Wright. We have the Honorable Ms. Gail Rittenhouse, and my name is Louis Quinones. I'll be serving as the panel chairman for your hearing. I'll begin this hearing with the following summary. Mr. Miguel Herrera is 48 years old. He was certified eligible by ADC for 31412B parole to his next consecutive sentence or absolute discharge. He's currently serving life imprisonment for first-degree murder or repetitive offense. He is pending a 10-year sentence for aggravated robbery and a 21-year sentence for kidnapping. Said crimes occurred on or about June 30th, 1988. He was approximately 18 years old at the time of the incident offense. He was convicted by jury trial on October 5th, 1989, and sentenced on November 16, 1989. He appealed his case, which resulted in lowering his sentence from death to life with a possibility parole on March 4th, 1993. Mr. Herrera,
yes,
had a limited, I'm continuing with the hearing, the summary, sir. Mr. Herrera had a limited criminal history prior to the offense. According to ADC time computation, he's been parole eligible since June 30th, 2013. Mr. Herrera, does this sound correct so far?
Yes, sir.
Thank you. I will now read a summary of the offense. On June 30, 1988, Mr. Herrera, his girlfriend and his father, and his two brothers purchased beer and wine and drove to an isolated dirt road in southwest Phoenix in two vehicles. After one car started overheating, they parked the two cars parallel to each other and started drinking and listening to music. Approximately an hour later, a passing motorist reported the vehicles to police believing there had been an accident. Maricopa County Sheriff's Deputy Vincent Marconet, responded to the scene and asked the individuals for their identification. Mr. Herrera's father became belligerent, which led to a scuffle in which Deputy Marconet was wrestled to the ground. His gun was taken from his possession. The group argued over who was going to shoot Deputy Marconet. Mr. Herrera later admitted that he held the gun on Deputy Marconet for 2 or 3 minutes as the victim was on the ground before he shot and killed Deputy Marconet. To Mr. Herrera's credit, he has completed considerable programming in ADC. This is a hearing to consider parole to his next sentence, and he has no release plan. He has no history of discipline in ADC from 1989 to present, with only one ticket for obstruction of staff, which was dismissed. This is his 10th hearing before the board. Numerous letters from members of the community have been submitted strongly opposing his parole. Likewise, we have a letter from the Maricopa County Attorney's Office dated September 13, 2017, opposing Mr. Herrera's parole. Mr. Herrera, we have some new board members since your last parole hearing. This is an opportunity for the board to get to know you. Can you tell us in your own words about the crimes that led to your incarceration?
Was led to it was there's nothing else, just alcohol. I wish I could change it a lot of stuff, but I can't. That old person, when I see him there, I don't see him anymore.
Mr. Herrera, you mentioned alcohol. Were you drinking a lot during that time?
Yes, sir.
And there was reference in your pre-sentencing report that you had some prior history with alcohol-related offenses. Had you been arrested before? Had there been other alcohol-related charges leading up to this?
When I was a minor, yes.
Those were juvenile charges?
Yes, sir.
And what were they for, sir?
What was that?
What were those charges for exactly?
Drunk. I was drunk when I was young.
Were you doing drugs as well, sir?
Marijuana. Yeah.
So this was a particularly violent crime. I looked at your history. There were some references to your family. I believe your father was at the scene. Is that correct?
Yes, sir.
People, as we've learned, under the influence, certainly don't make the best decisions. But without playing the psychologist or a counselor, usually there's something underneath going on in the individual that we don't know about. But what do you think was happening with you at that time that would lead to you killing a police officer?
Well, my upbringing, I was pretty much abused by my father. He used to be very abusive, feeding on me and my brothers.
And why would that lead to violent feelings towards police?
I wouldn't know. I really can't say.
I mentioned it in the summary that you appealed your case. If I read it correctly, your sentence was lowered from death to life imprisonment.
Yes.
Was that any source of relief to you?
Was that what?
Any source of relief to you that it was lowered from death to life?
Not really. I was expecting the death, because I accepted my punishment.
A little while ago you said that you look in the mirror and you see somebody different now. I recognize how young you were when you entered the prison system. I'm correct that you're 48 years old, is that correct, sir?
Yes, sir.
How do you believe you've changed in these last 30 years?
Well, when I was out there, I was misled in my way of thinking. Part of it was with my growing up and my father being the way he was.
Well, we're here for your hearing. What happened with your father, sir? This is your hearing, but what happened with your father in the criminal justice system? What happened with him?
He died.
Inside prison?
Yes.
point, I'm going to ask fellow board members if they have any questions for you. Yes, Mr. Johnson.
Sir, I just have one question, and I know the sheriff's office are pulling up there. What caused the confrontation with the sheriff's office? I mean, what sparked out the confrontation that the sheriff's office are pulled up there?
The influence of family members.
The what?
The influence of family members.
The influence of family members? Is that what you said?
Yes, sir.
Okay, so, I mean, did anybody have any warrants or anything like that that would make them want to have a conflict with the sheriff officer who was just pulling up to check welfare?
Yes, sir.
Somebody had warrants?
Yes.
And so that is why they struggled with the sheriff officer?
Yes, sir.
Because what I'm trying to understand, sir, and maybe you could help me with this, I'm really just trying to understand what it was that caused the struggle with the sheriff officer. Did the sheriff officer try to arrest somebody, or what happened?
Well, yes, my dad and my older brother.
So the officer tried to arrest your dad and your little brother, and that's what caused the struggle, because they were resisting the arrest?
Yes, sir.
Okay, all right, thank you, sir.
Any questions from fellow board members? Okay, I know we have some visitors inside the hearing room today. I want to double check. I have the signing papers in front of me, but do we have any supporters from Mr. Herrera in the room? Just double check. Okay, then I will ask the prosecutor to approach the podium. What's that? No. Actually, I was going to ask him to approach the podium, and then we'll ask about victims.
Yes, Mr. Chairman, this is Matthew Elias from the County Attorney's Office.
Yes, sir.
There is a representative from the Sheriff's Office who would like to address the board.
Outstanding.
As well as the victim advocate would like to address the board, and then I will save my comments for the record.
Thank you very much. Who would like to approach the podium first and speak on behalf of the victim?
Right after the hearing started, Jay Mann came in from the Fraternal Order of Police, and he's going to be speaking as well today.
Very well, thank you.
So I'm speaking for Mary Ann Marconet. She is the widow of the officer that was killed. And she, this discussion with her was over the phone and on paper. It's a little bit scattered, but I'm going to repeat it kind of as it was given to me, okay? She said that her husband was a deputy on duty, and these defendants surrounded him and they beat him. Her husband, they had a big reunion planned from, and people were flying across the country from England, and so when this happened, they had to suspend it. It caused a lot of replanning, retraveling of a reunion of 100 people or more that had been planning for over a year to come to a reunion. And so this was a big upset in their family. 7 siblings when this happened, 4 children, the oldest was 28 and the youngest was 21. Everybody took this extremely hard. The 8-year-old granddaughter at the time lived with them, and she wouldn't look at his picture. And so they had to take every picture down in all the houses, and that was really another upset in the family, is that they wouldn't be, felt that they couldn't memorialize because it traumatized that 8-year-old who was very close to the grandfather. The youngest son acted out for a long time and is only recently doing better. She's opposed to any kind of release, and she's very tired. The officer was a decorated officer. He had received 2 letters from President Ronald Reagan after the death, and letters from people that he affected. Prior criminals wrote to him all the time about how he impacted them. At the time, she recalls that it was one of the biggest manhunts looking for the defendants. Many, many resources were used, and there was a lot said about the manhunt and that time and resources that it took. It was a very high-profile crime. Judge Hall made comments about how heinous crime, and they did not have to go to the extremes that they did. The defendants didn't have to do that. One thing that she just cannot get out of her mind is that the defendants made him count to 100 before he killed him, and that the officer was looking at the barrel of a gun for a full 60 seconds, and this was broadcast over the radio. And so it was horrible. She just, it was humiliating, and it had a great impact on the officers as well. And the father was the defendant, today's inmate's father was yelling constantly in the background to shoot Officer Marquinet. She said that she's just too emotional to continue to appear at the co-defendant's hearing. She feels it's been constant, that he was initially given the death penalty, and that she's been through that entire process and of continual hearings and appeals. And then one thing that really sticks out in her mind as well is during the trial, and she was very specific that it was this inmate that did this, that he was drawing while he was at the table with his attorney, drawing stick figures around a dead body with a body with more stick figures with a gun pointing at it. And he held that up and was showing her and the couple people that were sitting with her during the trial. So she has been through the ringer. She has appeared at hearings. She wants to make sure that you know that of all the letters and the history of the prior hearings that have come, even though she can't be here today, and is highly opposed to release.
Thank you, ma'am. Any questions for the victim's advocate? Thank you, ma'am. Yes, sir. If you can approach the podium and state your name.
Thank you. Mr. Chairman and members of the board, my name is Joe Mann. I'm currently the executive director of the Arizona Fraternal Order of Police. However, on the day that Vern was murdered, I was the off-going shift supervisor for the deputies of that district. When this started, it drew a lot of media attention almost immediately. And the reason that I say this, because this damaged the family pretty badly. At the time, they had a news helicopter that was hovering over the scene and taking a shot of the deputy's car and a deputy in which you can see his boots. And they were broadcasting that for everyone to see. And Vern's wife saw that. And because we were such a close-knit family in this substation, all the deputies and all their wives knew where the deputies were working. And she knew this was right smack in the middle of Vern's beat. And she knew instinctively right then that that was her husband, and Vern was lying there dead, and no one had been able to talk to her at all. Unfortunately, I was the person that had to pick up the phone when she called the substation and tell her without any assistance on her end, and tell her that we're getting people to her as fast as we can. She was devastated. The family was devastated. The law enforcement officers that were working and across Maricopa County were devastated. And I'll tell you why we were particularly devastated, because this wasn't just an officer who was killed. This was an officer who was brutally beaten and executed on the side of a canal road for no good reason whatsoever. Simply drinking and warrants did not justify any form of resistance whatsoever, but it ended up with our good friend, Vern Marquinet, dead on the side of the road. My position is this inmate should never get out of prison. And I'll stand for any questions.
Just one, because I'm a native of the Valley and I remember how traumatizing this incident was myself. Am I correct that he was a very senior officer as well?
He had 19 years on. He was just short of retirement. He was a well-known officer, too. He worked in the community out there. Everybody knew, you know, back in those days, the sheriff's office, we kind of owned our district. You know, that was our area. We got to know people. We stayed in our beats, and we worked our beats and got to know people pretty well. And Vern also was known nationally, too, because he ran, as an off-duty job, the Phoenix International Raceway, the security and the traffic that was out there. And, you know, people would come from all over the country, and it seemed they all knew Vern, and they were looking for him when they came to town.
Yes, sir, Mr. Johnson.
So I was just kind of, and you may or may not be familiar with this, but the Victim Witness Advocate stated that this was broadcast over the radio for 460 seconds before shots were fired.
Do you know, Mr. Johnson, I'm not aware of the details. I've heard some of that, and what you heard described, I've heard before, but okay. I am not aware of the details of the investigation.
Okay, thank you, sir.
Mr. Johnson, I'll ask this too, just to understand what you're asking. I think I know as to whether or not the mic had been keyed during the incident. Is that what you're asking?
Well, it sounded as though that someone must have keyed the mic and,
okay.
and it was broadcasting. If it was broadcast over the radio during that period of time, that was just.
Yeah, Mr. Johnson, I will tell you what I've heard. I will tell you that I do not know.
Okay, yeah, if you don't know, sir, I don't want you to tell us no of the hearsay. So that's why I was asking you, because that was brought out. I thought maybe you may have been aware of that.
Mr. Johnson, I am aware of the calls that came into dispatch that were forwarded to me from people who had seen something go terribly wrong and watched that, and the description that was given to me was he was executed.
Okay. All right, thank you, sir.
Thank you so much, sir, and thank you for representing.
Thank you.
Thank you for having me. My name is Sergeant Neville. I'm currently employed with the Maricopa County Sheriff's Office. I spent about 12 years working the same district as Deputy Markinhead. It was a little bit before my time. I'm just here representing the Sheriff's Office. Everybody that works District 2, which is the district that Vern was killed in, and I think it's important, I think his name was misstated early on by Mr. Quinones. His name is Vernon Markinhead, not Vincent.
Oh, hold on.
The letter has it wrong. The letter has...
And I'm sorry, I don't mean to be defensive. No, I want to make sure that it was written as Benson. But thank you for that correction, sir.
Not a problem. All too often, I think some of these hearings, they obviously focus on the person eligible for parole, but I think it's important that you folks understand who Vernon was. Vernon was a father of two sons and a father of two daughters. He was a husband to his wife, and... I can only assume that during that 60 seconds where he was staring down the barrel of his own gun after being beaten with his own radio and begging for his life, holding his hands up to prevent himself from being shot in the face with his own gun, their faces went through his memory. Okay? He was shot through his hand, in his head, execution style, just like Lieutenant Mann said. And I can only assume that his family's faces were flashing through his memory during that time. And I think it's important that gets remembered and the impact that it continues to have on the sheriff's office. Because I came on in 2004, many years after Vern was killed in the line of duty, and I walked past his picture every single day at the district for 12 years that I've worked there. Academy graduates to this day run past his the site where he was murdered, where his memorial has been erected at 35th Avenue in Carver. During the academy as a memorial to him. So his memory lives on, but I have to echo what Lieutenant Mann is saying, is that Mr. Herrera does not deserve to see the light of day after what he did to Deputy Markinhead. That's all I have to say on the matter.
Thank you, sir. I'm going to ask if there's any questions, but thank you. Any questions from fellow board members? Again, thank you for representing.
Thank you.
Chairman, members of the board, my name is Matthew Elias from the Maricopa County Attorney's Office. And Mr. Chairman, initially I'd like to apologize for the typographical error of Deputy Markinhead's first name. That was my fault on the letter that I submitted. So I'd like to apologize to the board.
That's understandable, sir. It is a typo, but thank you.
And I'm not going to belabor the facts of this case. I think that the board has been informed through the other speakers of the heinous nature of this crime, the fact that we had a Maricopa County Sheriff's deputy basically executed on the side of the road. The only point that I'd like to elaborate on from the prior speakers is the fact that this inmate, Mr. Herrera, was holding Deputy Marquinette's gun to his head for anywhere from 1 to 3 minutes. The mental anguish that Deputy Marquinette suffered during that time period, not knowing his fate, not knowing how this situation was going to end, after he had radioed for help, hoping that help would arrive, it's just truly a horrific crime, and the original sentence that inmate Herrera received was the death penalty for the murder of Deputy Marquinette. The Arizona Supreme Court, in their opinion from 1993 that, Mr. Chairman, that you referenced, affirmed the conviction and affirmed the consecutive sentence for aggravated robbery and for kidnapping. That was a 10-year consecutive sentence for aggravated robbery and a 21-year consecutive sentence for kidnapping. Now, the Arizona Supreme Court, in their opinion, reduced inmate Herrera's sentence on the first-degree murder conviction from a death sentence to a life sentence. And the reasoning for doing that was taking into consideration all the factors that had been presented at trial, those being Mr. Herrera's age at the time of 18, his dysfunctional family, his employment slash limited criminal history of juvenile alcohol offenses, his intoxication at the time, his mental health status, and the Arizona Supreme Court put a special emphasis on the duress that inmate Herrera was under as he was holding the gun to Deputy Marquinette and his father was yelling at him to shoot him and shoot him. And that was the deciding factor in the Arizona Supreme Court's opinion in reducing the sentence from death to a life imprisonment sentence. The point I'd like to make on that is, in so doing, the Arizona Supreme Court has provided great leniency to Mr. Herrera previously. And the only point that I would make is, when Mr. Herrera was holding the gun and his father was yelling at him, shoot him, shoot him, Mr. Herrera could have easily handed the gun to somebody else. He didn't. He chose to shoot Deputy Marquinette, a helpless law enforcement officer, execution style, on the side of the road. For those reasons, and for the fact that Mr. Herrera has already been provided great leniency by the Arizona Supreme Court, the Maricopa County Attorney's Office objects to absolute discharge, objects to home arrest, and objects to a 412B for inmate Herrera. Does the board have any questions?
I have no questions, but thank you for the follow-up on the appeal. It's meaningful. Thank you. Mr. Herrera, we're getting to the end of your hearing. Is there a final statement that you would like to make to the board before we go into discussion? We only ask that you don't repeat yourself, but this is your hearing, so is there anything else that you would like to offer?
Only that it didn't take minutes, it took seconds. It wasn't minutes. What was suggested as minutes was by the detectives.
Thank you, Mr. Herrera. Is there anything else you would like to share with the board?
Only that I'm sorry. And I wish I could change things.
Thank you, Mr. Herrera. The board will be going into discussion now. It may sound like we're speaking to you, especially because you cannot see us, but is the board discussing the case amongst itself before we come to our individual votes? So if we'll just remain on the phone, we will come back to you shortly with our decision. The board is in discussion now. Fellow board members, I think it goes without saying that this was a heinous crime. And as I stated earlier, certainly not from the position of compromising any detachment or making my position personal. I certainly do remember how traumatizing this particular incident was to the community. And I'll simply say that based on the serious nature of this crime, I believe that paroling Mr. Rarer to his next consecutive sentence would not further the interests of justice nor be consistent with the safety and welfare of the public. It should be noted that, to the board, that Mr. Rarer won, if you will, an appeal to his lower sentence from to a lower sentence from death to life, which, in the opinion of one voting board member, is already considerable leniency. That's where I'll begin the discussion. I am certainly open to the collective wisdom of my colleagues. Yes, Mr. Johnson.
I agree. I think it was a heinous, cold-blooded, calculated crime. It appears that it was unprovoked by the officer just doing his job, and apparently after the officer was disarmed, they could have just left. Or had to shoot or kill a victim, or could have just left. And it's just, I can't see paroling this gentleman to his next consecutive sentence.
Thank you, Mr. Johnson. Any further input?
Mr. Chairman, I agree with the two of you. I think any time when a citizen attacks a law enforcement officer, someone who's protecting the community, who's even protecting him, I just don't see any mercy at this time. And I believe this is my fifth time hearing this story from participating in a hearing, rather. And each time my vote has been the same, and I've heard nothing this morning to change my opinion. Therefore, I do believe that we should deny paroling him to his next consecutive sentence or absolute discharge.
Yes, Ms. Rittenhouse.
Thank you. Additionally, I just, Dr. Wright said something that made me think of the fact that this deputy initially arrived because there was a call that potentially they were in some sort of distress, some sort of car trouble. So he was there to help them, and this happened. So I agree with my colleagues.
Thank you, Ms. Rittenhouse. I'm going to go ahead and make my motion, and we'll see where the votes land. And that is, my motion is to deny parole to the next consecutive sentence or absolute discharge. And I am also asking for a one-year set-off, again, with the reminder that in the state of Arizona, we have no mechanism to set off beyond 1 year. And I will state my reasons before the vote. And that is a serious and violent offense, loss of human life. I'd say based on the totality of this case, serious and deviant offense, trauma to the victim, serious bodily injury, no family or community support system. And you'll notice that there's some boxes I didn't check because he has had considerable programming and good institutional behavior and little in the way of a previous criminal history. But is there anything that the board feels that I'm missing that I need to check? Yes, Mr. Johnson.
The 1 year set off?
Yes, I set off. I'll state it as one. And that is my motion is to deny parole to the next consecutive sentence. I'm asking for a one-year set-off, and my reasons are serious and violent offense, loss of human life, serious and deviant offense, trauma to the victim, serious bodily injury, no family or community support system.
Could we add victim harassment?
Oh, thank you. Thank you. That was mentioned during the hearing, and I didn't make a note of that. Thank you, Ms. Rittenhouse. Anything else?
I don't have nothing. I just wanted to make a, and I don't know, it looks like that this last hearing was in April of this year, and it was marked for a one-year set-off. It just seemed like it came back to us pretty quick for the one-year set-off. It was almost like a 6 month. So I just wanted to put on record that we make sure that we do the one-year
set-off. That we do the one-year.
Yes. Thank you, Mr. Johnson. Any further discussion? Well, that is my motion.
Second.
Agreed.
Okay, Mr. Herrera, we made the motion to deny parole to your next consecutive sentence or absolute discharge, and we stated our reasons. Was it clear to you? Mr. Herrera?
Yes.
We made a motion, it was carried, to deny parole to the next consecutive sentence or absolute discharge. We asked for 1 year set off, and we stated the reasons. Were our reasons clear to you?
Yes.
Okay, sir. Well, thank you for appearing before this board. This brings our hearing to conclusion. We asked for 1 year set off, so you should be receiving another hearing in approximately 1 year. This concludes our hearing.
Yes.